Well, I'm going to give you a little news how we're coming on Church at Home and some other things that we are doing. First of all, we've had a difficult time narrowing down the kind of camera that we need. And since we have been in contact with Randy Vild, and Randy Vild has had well over a decade of doing audio and video production. He has his own business called Vild Productions. And we spent some time with him last week or the week before and saw the opening that he has for Church at Home, and he's since even upgraded that. And I've been wanting to get done before the feast a couple of pro forma programs. So we used our old camera, and I had Jim come over and do the video taping on it. Now, Jim won't be able to do that on a regular basis, so we're going to have Dave Froloff come down at least every other week, do the videotaping, take it home, do some preliminary editing. And one of the things that we want to do, so I need to get to you so you can have it, and you may have to buy a humongous external hard drive for memory. We'll try and get a 3 terabyte, because when you do the videos in a relatively high pixel rating, then you're going to take up a lot of memory in doing it. But what I need to do is get you the whole Bible on Word doc. We'll have it PDF, but you can cut and paste. And the first thing that we want is so you can bi-screen and tri-screen on the editing. So we'll have to get the software and all that figured out. And then when I'm reading the scriptures, you put the scriptures up there. So the first two that I did were half hour. And what I did, I went 12 minutes and then a 3-minute commercial for 14 Rules of Bible Study. And then I finished off the rest of the session. And in doing that, I realized how fast 12 minutes goes. Bang! So I thought, no. The next time what I'm going to do is I'm going to do 25 minutes and 5-minute commercial at the end. Because I think that in the presentation, I can hold the attention for 25 minutes. And even Jim couldn't keep up with the 12-minute thing. So anyway, going to try and get those all edited and out for all the feast sites, so everyone will have 2 to see. I did Why Church at Home. I may do it over again. It turned out really good, but I may do it over again. And Randy Vild is the one who's editing this time, which then will give us a sample on what Dave can shoot for when he's editing. So he's really added some things into it. When I read the scriptures, he has that up there and different things like that. But one I want him to do, and I told him what I wanted was this. I'm going to do a sermon, Where is God? And I did, in Tulsa, I did a brief one, what it would be like. But I want Randy to go ahead and take a quick shot of a temple, of a church, of a mega church, of a little church, a cathedral, St. Peter's Basilica, Western Wall, Mecca, where they're all streaming around, the Taj Mahal in India, the temples from Thailand, and the Orthodox cathedrals in Russia, you know, just click, click, click. Is God here? Is God here? Is God here? Where can you find God? Is God here? Has God deserted the earth? How can you find him? How can you get in touch with him? Does he even know you exist? And so that's the part that we'll have Randy do editing on after Dave gets it down for the scriptures. When we just have the scriptures, then you'll be able to do that tri-screen and bi-screen. And so we need to get the program for you so you can start experimenting with it and learning how to do it. We can send you some of our old videos and you can start with those. So yesterday I purchased the camera and a warranty for the camera, and I purchased 500 videotapes. Not 500, 50. 50 videotapes, which then gets the cost down to $2 a pop. Which is pretty good. You know, they're digital, they're film. They're film. They're the film. Because what we want to do, Randy said, we want to have film for the master. And we can always keep that in the archives. And as you do the filming, then we can have it go directly digitized into a computer. And then from there, you start the editing. Okay. So I got that. And also, because I'm going to get a digital recorder to take with me instead of my audio cassette. So my Sony audio cassette days are limited. So we'll retire this and wait if there's an emergency down the road for whatever. But in order to do that, I had to get a digital player recorder, which will play back from the digital CD onto an audio tape, because we have prisoners who can't receive CDs because they can make nice little knives and stab each other with them. Okay. And nor can we send them hard copy books. They have to have all paperback books because they can make bayonets out of the other one. I mean, what they do, you watch some of these MSNBC and CNBC specials that they have on prisoners, you'll understand what we're talking about here. Plus, we also have four women who do transcription for us, and they have a cassette player, and what they do, they have it so they have a foot pedal to start and stop it, so you don't have to hit pause, you don't have to hit start or any of that, you just hit the pedal. And so we have to have the cassettes for them. And in addition, we have several blind who the only thing that they can work are the cassette players. We have one or two very senior members that can't operate the newfangled equipment, so we send them the tapes, so we have to have that. So I ordered a mic, and so everything's ready to go. We will see what we can do. So Randy's been editing it, and he said he really likes it, and he likes our new backdrop that we have. And he said that that was a home run when we got that. So, what is the backdrop? You will see it when you see the video. And I think you're going to really like the opening. He's modified it a little bit. But when the video starts, it is going to be really great. And this is going to be professionally done. And so it's not going to be like our old videos. You know, we have what? 400 or 500 of the old videos. Or just cameras running and I'm sitting here we won't have that. However, for those of you in the different fellowship groups in different places, we are going to try and do this, which will be another separate operation. When I come up to Fairview, or Fairfield rather, not Fairview, when I come up to Fairfield, we meet in a little church, we meet in a room here, and now with that, that will be a separate operation from Church at Home. That will be so that you will receive at least 2 up-to-date videos of live sermons a month. And it won't require all that much more. Just set the camera up, let it run, and I don't think we're going to do hardly any editing in it. So this way everybody can have more up-to-date sermons on DVDs. Now, that's going to require a little more effort, a little more expense and things like that, but that's okay. That's why people give tithes and offerings to help do this, to serve the brethren, to preach the gospel. And of course, the gospel needs to be preached to the brethren as well as to the world. But I think you're going to see, when you see the Church at Home videos, I think you're going to be really surprised as, number one, to the quality, and number two, how it will be very effective in reaching out to people. I'm going to do a 10-minute advertising to go on YouTube. And years ago, when I first brought up about Church at Home, someone said, well, why don't you offer bumper stickers? You know, churchathome.com or whatever. Okay. Now, I mentioned that we had the, for the Bible, we secured the video site, not video site, but the internet site, domain name, Original Bible Restored. Now, I wasn't quite satisfied with that, even though we got it, so I had Ron Carey have them do another search, and we secured two more names for .com, .net, .org, and that is The Original Bible Restored and Restoring the Original Bible. So when anyone does any kind of search, they're going to come into the site Restoring the Original Bible. Now, how we're going to handle that is this. We have .com, .org, .net. So for what Bob Ellsworth is going to do in selling the Bibles, they will use restoringtheoriginalbible.com. On our websites, we will have a click-through to the Original Bible, which will be restoringtheoriginalbible.net. So this will keep the incomes and billing differently. So I'm going to have Bob Ellsworth and his partner Mike McKinney go ahead and manage those two sites. On the .net, we will pay them a fee for processing it, for the credit cards or whatever, taking the order, we'll pay them a fee, and then they'll, whatever money they get beyond that, then they'll reimburse to us like they have been. On the one with .com that they will run, they will manage that, and then they will pay us wholesale for all the Bibles that they sell with that. Then the third one, .org, is going to be used for selling the PDFs of all our publications. Be the Bible, be all the books, plus we can give some freebies with it also. Now, in preparing for the Church at Home, Phil Neal, our editor, has been taking sections out of the Bible, sections out of all of our publications, and we now have 40 2 to 4 page downloads on things: who and what is a Christian, where was Jesus born, how to study the Bible, does God exist, all of those things. We will have those on all the websites. So those will be available, but especially for Church at Home, and we'll also have them on cbcg.org. Now, we have also been working for several years to update and modernize cbcg.org, and we've had our bumps and scrapes in trying to do this and trying to get it handled in a right way. So since Randy Vild is professional in that, I'm having him go through our test site for cbcg.org and to upgrade that, to put in some, to put photos and things like that, to upgrade it, to make it more friendly, change the home page. And someone asked me the other day, said, "Well, I went through your whole website and I didn't find any videos." So I emailed him back and I said, "We have about 400 videos of sermons I've done over the last 20 years, but we don't have any of those online." So we have some of them converted to digital. And what we need to do is get a whole bunch more of them converted, and so we can get those online. But those will require some editing too. I don't think we have the pause in the middle of the sermon like we normally do now, going way back. But I think it would be interesting to get all of those on there. And if you see some that go back quite a few years, you will see my old skunk streak as I was getting gray. I had this dark streak of hair right down the middle. And so much so that a woman came up to me one time and said, "Do you dye your hair?" And I said, no. So those will be there. I did one about 20 years ago, warning about the ACLU. And that was done by Ed Arundel, down at his apartment. And at that time, I was using a shampoo where my hair would turn green. And it had a little green tint to it, you know. Really professional-like. And the drapes behind where I was speaking was green gold. So some of it just looks like a face speaking out of the drapes. So anyway, that's why we don't have them online. Besides, it takes a lot of space to put them online, and your web costs go up considerably. So that's where we are on it. We have one more pass on God's Bible Pathway for Children, and we will have that after the feast. So that's just about done. That's taken quite a bit of work to get that going. And we thank Jane Spring for doing it and sending it to us, and Don and Bonnie Burroughs for working it all up, and for the Vogelies for setting it in the pages. And I think you'll really like it. And we're making progress on the youth series in Proverbs. We have 6 of those little booklets so far. We hope to have a whole passel of those. So we're gradually building. And talking to a woman the other day, she said, "Well, the Church of God they were going to didn't have anything for children, and they didn't have anything for the youth." And I told her about the coloring books that we do every year for the feast, and the youth series, and what we're doing with God's Bible Pathway for Children. And I think everyone will really, really be surprised when they get those. So what we're trying to do is not only feed the flock, but have an an outreach to brand new people. Oh, one more thing. Bible Project is moving along. They are just about ready to start binding, putting on the covers. So that's all the news. Now we have one Bible question concerning Deuteronomy 16. Did we make any modifications to Deuteronomy 16? And we did in the first verse. It now reads, "Observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover." It will read, "Keep the month of Abib and observe the Passover." Now that's the way that Everett Fox has in the Shocking Bible. And looking that up, that is more accurate, and it does this too, because there are a lot of people who say, well, we have to go out and observe the new moon, or we have to go out and observe the ripe barley. Okay. Now that creates a problem. When we are spread out worldwide, north and south, east and west, as differentiated from the very small geographical area of Palestine. Observing, and unless you're an expert observer and know what to look for the new moon, you're going to miss it. So this is why God has given the calculated Hebrew calendar. Now let me explain just a little more, since we're on to the calendar here, and I think this will help some people understand even more. The reason it has to be calculated, especially when we all observe these things on a worldwide basis, God wants us all on the same day around the world. And it takes 24 hours for a day to begin at sunset, and 24 hours for a day to end at sunset. Now, in observing, the days are easy to figure, because anybody, regardless of your education, can look on the horizon and you can see when the sun sets. No problem. To observe a new moon requires an expert in astronomy visually to see it. And the reason being is this. The new moon does not appear any sooner than 14 hours and about 50 minutes from the time it sets, the old moon sets. Now, it can also not rise until 24 hours later. And that's because the synchronization of the Earth and the Moon are not exact precise. In addition to that, when people in different places of the world look to observe for a new moon, those in the northern latitudes cannot see it for 2 or 3 days afterwards. Most people, when they look for the new moon, really do not see the new moon. You see the second day. Because the new moon, as it appears, is such a very small sliver that appears in the western horizon right after the sun sets, that it's virtually impossible to see it unless you know what you're looking for. Okay. In addition to that, as you move around the world, the day changes, does it not? So you end up with a problem that even the Muslims, now the Muslims have a strictly lunar calendar, which is this. They pay no attention to the solar year. whereas the Hebrew calculated calendar incorporates the lunar and the solar so that everything is coordinated. Now, in being coordinated, then, you have to know what you're looking for if you're going to observe, because you're going to miss it. So this is why God gave the calculated Hebrew calendar, so we don't have to go out and look. Now today, we have a lot of clouds here. You can't see it. And I remember my first encounter with a man named Herm Solinsky. This was way back in 1981. And he was trying to convince me that we ought to go by the observable new moon. And I asked him, I said, well, what are you going to do when it's cloudy? Oh, he says, well, I've got a program in my computer. And I said, oh, you mean it's calculated? Yes. I said, well, then I'm stuck with a problem. I either accept the calculations that God gave to the Levitical priesthood or the ones you devised in your computer. So I choose to follow what God has given us. I told him right to his face as I was walking out the door, and I turned around and left. Because anyone who tampers with trying to figure out a better way than God has given, what are you doing? You're adding to or taking away. Is that not correct? Yes, indeed. That's right. You're nearly placing yourself in a position of God, but you're placing yourself as the final authority as to when the months that God has given begin and end, and when the holy days, Passover and feast, begin and end. This is why, with all the confusion from the man-made calendars, you have people observing the Feast of Tabernacles as much as 2 days different, some cases 3 days different. Now, since God is not the author of confusion, God chose to give the calculated Hebrew calendar to end confusion. In addition, calculating the movement of the earth, the sun, and the moon, and in relation to the stars that are in heaven, is not simple math. It is very complicated in the way that these things move. Now, God did give, for the calculated Hebrew calendar, a very straightforward way of calculating. And I have found in my 50 years in the church that it is always accurate. There is a full moon on the 15th day of the first month. There is a full moon on the 15th day of the seventh month. Now, I'm not going to get into any more discussion of the calendar except to say, if you have questions concerning it, write us and we will send you 6 hours of video and about 9 inches high of backup material that you can study. Now, you're going to have to apply yourself to study it. So if you have questions, we'll answer them. But it took 6 hours for me to do those videos after many, many hours of preparing for it. Question is, how does that affect people in the southern hemisphere, because the pattern of stars is different, and the sun rises in the east, but it's north. And for all you flat worlders, if the earth is flat, the sun should always come up from the south. Is that not correct? So why then, when you go below the equator, the sun appears at noon in the north? So I'll let you think on that. So yes, that's another reason why he gave the calculated Hebrew calendar. And though the seasons are opposite down there, they are still similar enough that it does work. So the more you get into trying to figure it out on your own, and try and outguess God, the more difficult it becomes. And people have to become very self-righteous in it because they're not willing to budge. One comment concerning waiting for the ripe barley. Okay. Number one, the climate in Palestine is different today than it was in the Old Testament. And if you don't believe that, go to the library and get a book on botany in the Holy Land. And it will amaze you how different it is. Number two, when the grain ripens depends upon when you plant it. And it also depends upon the weather. This is another reason why God gave the calculated Hebrew calendar. Now, those who want to go to the Holy Land, supposedly, and look at the barley and determine, oh, well, this is when we start counting for Pentecost. You always miss it because the climate is different. It doesn't matter if you travel over there to see it. Where are you going to look for it to get ripe? In Jericho? Well, that always ripens first because that is warmer and is one of the low points in the valley that runs north and south that ends in the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea is the lowest place, 2,500 feet below sea level. Okay. Or instead of Jericho, where it ripens early, are you going to look at it in Samaria? Now, it may be a day or two or three later. Or are you going to look at a place up near Jerusalem, which may be another day later? And since there is not an official priesthood or a temple to do that, God did not leave it to us to go look at the barley and try and find out when it ripens. Now, you might try that at home. Get yourself some barley, plant some 1 week, some another week, some another week, give one lots of water, give another one not so much water, plant some in the shade, plant some in the direct sun, and then you figure out when the barley is ripe. So this is why we said, keep the month of Abib, because the month of Abib is not to be observed, being observed in the sense you are looking for the new moon. And that's how a lot of people interpreted it, and that is precisely why Everett Fox said, keep the month of Abib and observe the Passover to the Lord your God. Now let's cover a couple more verses here in Deuteronomy 16. For in the month of Abib, the Lord your God brought you forth out of Egypt by night. What night was that? Beginning of the 15th, correct? All right. Now, all right. Notice, observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover to the Lord your God. Period. That ends that statement. This is where a lot of people go and where the Jews go to try and justify a 15th Passover. That's why in the Passover book I have in there, why do the Jews insist on a 15th Passover when the Bible says the 14th? The answer is very simple. In order to keep a 14th Passover, you had to be within the borders of the land of Israel. I explain it thoroughly in the Passover book, so if you don't have it, write for it. And someone said, well, why do you have to have 500 pages to explain about the Passover? Because there are so many people who don't believe God and have their own traditions and want to be better than God and do it their way. Number two, because the Passover and the correct timing for the New Testament, for the New Covenant, is very important because Jesus said, do this. So if you don't do the Passover, you're not in covenant with Christ. That's the Christian Passover. So what does Satan want to do? What is his favorite tactic? What about this? What about that? The whispering doctrines question. Well, what does God mean here? Is this the 15th Passover? We'll see in just a minute. So the 14th, from sunset to sunset, is the Passover day. Right? Right. The 15th is from the sunset of the 14th to the sunset of the 15th, correct? That's the day he brought them forth out of Egypt by night. Now, verse 2 is a real conundrum, especially when you look in the Old Testament and find that the original Passover was a domestic Passover. And now they say this is a temple Passover. And this does away with the domestic Passover. Well, if it does away with the domestic Passover kept in a house, why did Jesus and his disciples eat the Passover in a house? That's all explained in the book. See, because there are so many carnal-minded people out there who want to be religious, who want to twist and turn the Word of God, it required 500 pages to answer the questions. So we will give you the answer here in summary form. Verse 2. You shall therefore sacrifice the Passover offering. Now understand there is a difference between the Passover sacrifice and the Passover offering. And I'll explain that in a minute. Unto the Lord your God, of the flock and the herd. Now stop there for a minute. Go back to Exodus 12. Okay? Exodus 12. What did God tell the children of Israel concerning the Passover sacrifice, not offering? Exodus 12, and let's pick it up here, verse 5. Okay, you ready? Okay. Your lamb and your calf. Doesn't say that, does it? It says, your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. You shall take it from the sheep or from the goats. Why? If this is the Passover back here in Deuteronomy 16, does God contradict himself and say, take of the herd as well? Have you ever heard of the Passover calf? No, it's the Passover lamb. Behold, Jesus was the calf that took away the sins of the world, or the lamb? Okay, I'm being a bit facetious here to make a point. Because the Passover sacrifice is different from the Passover offering. Notice verse 26, Exodus 12. And it shall be when your children shall say to you, what does this service mean to you? Then you shall say, it is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, not offering. So what are we dealing with in Deuteronomy 16? Okay? Let's go back there and we'll find out here in just a minute. Let's read verse 2 again. And you shall therefore sacrifice the Passover offering. See, it is not the Passover sacrifice. to the Lord your God of the flock. Now, it doesn't say of the sheep and the goat, does it? It says, and the herd, in the place which the Lord your God shall choose to place his name there. Now, what could these sacrifices be? And for what purpose were they offered? And we will have to say, beginning on the day portion of the Passover day, which then was what? After they had the Passover sacrifice the night before. All right? What were they doing with these? Why did God command those to be at the tabernacle or the temple, whereas the Passover was to be kept in the home? And I remember when I first understood it, I read that and I was reading it in bed out of a Hebrew interlinear, and I said, bingo, that's it. There's no such thing as a Passover calf. There's no such thing as a Passover sacrifice from the herd. All right. Now let's come back here to Exodus, the 13th chapter. And we will see what they were preparing for with those offerings on the day portion of the Passover. Now let's pick it up here, chapter 13, and actually chapter 12:51 should be the first verse, so we moved it down there for the sake of continuity and flow. And it came to pass the very same day when the Lord brought the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt by their armies. That's what we're talking about, Deuteronomy 16, is it not? Yes. Okay. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, sanctify all the firstborn to me, whatever opens the womb among the children of Israel, of man and of beast, it is mine. When did he speak these words? Right when they were beginning to leave Egypt. Because not only did he spare the firstborn while they were in Egypt, now he's taking them out of Egypt. Moses said to the people, remember this day in which you came out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for the Lord brought you out from this place by the strength of his hand. There shall no leaven be eaten. On this day you are going out in the month of Abib. Now, we will tie this all together and see exactly what Deuteronomy 16 is telling us. Let's go to the next track, please.